Cubs, Cubs, here come the Cubs. Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs.
Thanks, Rob. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With till 11 o'clock tonight, we got a great show about the Cubs culture. It's World Series week here in the 720 WGN. Coming up, Horatio Sands, Joe Nunez. Talk about coming all the way from L.A., renting a home. Just like within houses of Wrigley Field. Did this with the idea, knowing that this team was going to go to the World Series. They did this a couple months ago. They said, yeah, you know what? Let's take a shot at it. So that'll be coming up. Also, Ike Barinholtz, who's a Hollywood. He's on television, Mindy Project. He's also in the movie Suicide Squad, Sisters, Neighbors. He grew up in Wrigleyville. He's coming back this weekend, so we'll talk to him about being a lifelong Cub fan. Two lifelong Cub fans in studio with me. Now, my next guest, known as the Bleacher Preacher, and he's been going to Cubs games since he was 8 years old. Jerry Pritikin is well known around the friendly confines. His job, to convert the opposite team's fans. He's been out in the bleacher since 1985, and he's among thousands of Cubs fans that are waiting for this weekend like a kid on Christmas morning. One of the original bleacher bums, Jerry Pritikin, the Bleacher Preacher, is with us now. Thanks for being here, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Hey, I love to be here.
And Walter Jacobson, of course, sticking around tonight. I love it. I'm riding shotgun, talking Cubs culture with the former bat boy from 1952. All right, so, Jerry, let me ask you about this. You know, I kind of teased it out at the beginning, the idea that, you know, you had asked your dad when you were 8 years old to say, hey, can we go to the World Series?
Well, actually, what happened just before that was I went to a summer camp up in Round Lake, Illinois. We thought that was far away. And when I came back, while at camp, World War II came to an end. And when I got home, my father gave me a two-wheel Schwinn bike and a J.C. Higgins mitt. And that's not a ball player. That was Sears brand. And it was $8.95. He never let me forget how much he paid for it. And then gave me a crash course in Baseball 101, Cubs history, how to keep a scorecard. And then took me out to beautiful Wrigley Field. And that was like going into the Grand Canyon of baseball. And the scoreboard, of course, I'm much smaller at that time, looked much bigger than it looked great. And from that point, I was hooked.
You know, for you, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Wrigley Field means a lot to you. You've been there so many times. We'll talk about your career in the bleachers, if you will, as the Bleacher Preacher. But not only that, but just as a kid. I mean, going to baseball, you and your brother going there and actually getting paid by the team to flip the seats and clean the bleachers. Talk about your experiences with Wrigley Field before being the Bleacher Preacher.
Well, I'll tell you, when my father didn't take me to the World Series the following years, that's when my brother and I started cleaning up the ballpark. And I remember just before going back to school, and it had to be late August, when we cleaned, one kid would pick up the seat and someone else with a broom would push it into a burlap bag, and we would go all the way down the line. And I remember this one kid looking at the left field foul pole, and a pennant from the championship year was there. And I remember him saying, "Wait till next year." And that was the first time I ever heard that expression. And who knew that I would keep hearing it for 71 years.
71 years. You know, Jerry, you went to San Francisco for a number of years, and you really caught the attention of you know, a lot of people because you were such a Cub fan at Candlestick at the old San Francisco Park. But when you came back to Chicago, you took on this this persona, the Bleacher Preacher. Where's it come from?
Well, actually, I got involved in a play called Bleacher Bums in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be a six-week run, and it ran for a year and a half, and I was handling the publicity. And I pat myself on the back because the Bill Veeck and Me came out. And I started doing crazy promotions, created the Butterfinger as the official candy bar of the Cubs. And I got Andy Frayne usher uniforms here when I came in for a vacation and took back, and our ushers were dressed like Andy Frayne ushers. I came into this building, and there was a display in the old gallery here called 35 Years of the Cubs Dropping the Ball. That was before they owned a team. And I asked, what were they going to do with the display when they were through with it? So I talked to their PR man, Bob Sanders. And he says, "What's the address of the theater? I'll send it to you." So we had a great the show had to move from a small theater to a large theater because we were selling out. There was a baseball strike that year. I got all the writers to come to see the play because they had nothing to write about.
1981, but right.
I got this display, and I put it in the lobby. I have the original, I won't say the original, but the four yellow street signs of that surround a ballpark. And I made a lobby, Wrigley Field West, and I could always tell when someone came into the theater, when they start looking, that they were either Chicagoans or Midwesterners. And there was one line in the play where they mentioned Ernie Banks come out of retirement, and when the cheers go up, you can also tell who's the Cub chair, fans.
Right.
And like you said, there was a tremendous amount in the Bay Area.
Well, I mean, for you to, and we'll pick up, we'll take a quick break, we'll come back and talk more with Jerry Pritikin and the Bleacher Preacher. I mean, really, the culture of the bleachers at Wrigley Field, a lot of it had to do with the fact that these were day games and there were a lot of people out there that were soaking up the sun, a ton of characters, Walter, that sort of came out of that and then were almost showcased by WGN-TV, the idea that every third inning or fourth inning they'd show somebody out there doing something. It became sort of like, when you think of baseball fandom and you think of baseball fans, the bleachers, the bleacher bums, the characters that hung out at Wrigley Field in the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, there's no comparison.
It was more than just a ball game. As you say, it was a culture because you can't see as well out there as you can in the grandstand or even in the upper deck. So the people who were there were not that committed to the finer points of baseball as they were joining, being comrades and pulling for the team, right?
But there was one thing also for you were between the lines and you felt part of a game when a ball was hit your way or you almost broke with the sound of a bat, a ball hitting the bat. But I loved the fact that there was space. If you wanted to lie down on a bench, you could. there were people, you know, the betting section over in right field, they would bet on how many drops of water would come out of the vendor's box when he's selling a beer.
Yeah, right.
And there was always something going on beside the baseball game.
Jerry Pritikin, Walter Jacobson, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about Wrigley Field, the bleachers, and the Bleacher Preacher. Stay with us.
And one more thing before we leave that we'll be telling you. We'll keep them flying high for Cubby Blue. Well, here's to you.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Jerry Pritikin. He's the Bleacher Preacher. Talking Cubs culture all this week here on the download, 720 WGN. Walter Jacobson sticking around as well. Riding shotgun tonight. Good to see you, Walter. All right, so let's, Jerry, you know, we talked about how you sort of got to the point of being the Bleacher Preacher, but talk about what the Bleacher Preacher is. What is your what's your goal when you're out in the bleachers in 1985? You know, with the hat and the signs, what's the goal?
Well, one of the first things, my hat, that pit helmet with the propeller on it, if I see a Cardinal fan or a Braves fan or one other, and I would start in by saying, where did you get that funny-looking hat? And that breaks the ice right there. And every once in a while, I used to convert non-believers. I went to a whole ritual, put my hand on their head and say, in the name of the Father, Bill Veeck Sr., and the Son, Bill Veeck Jr., and the Holy Soul of Charlie Grimm, holy cow, you're now a Cub fan, and that allows you to stand up with Harry in the seventh inning. And I did that many times, and it was something. Of course, my signs, I would, depending on who was coming to town or what was happening. So it was all season long, there was something happening, except the Cubs.
I'm surprised there were fans to convert, because what my memory was that everybody in the bleacher was a Cubs fan. No, I guess that's obviously not true, right?
Well, that's what happened. You know, when GM started being a superstation, people used to plan their vacation from other towns to be when they were going to visit Chicago when they knew there was a homestand. And they made signs for their friends back home that they could hold.
So you know, you had to be careful, though. I mean, there's a lot of beer flowing out in the bleachers, and it's not a place where people want to go to get preached
to. Yeah, how do you deal with people who don't want to be part of the shtick?
Well, I really haven't had that much, bad news people. A few Cardinal fans. One once hit me over my head with his hand, I guess, and broke my solar propeller. But all in all, I got along pretty good with the You know, what's a Met? You know, it was simple. Right. I think I was Milton Berle, except out in the bleachers.
Well, you know, I read a story today, and this was a story that Mick Dumke did in the Reader about, you know, in the 90s, you kind of soured a little bit on the Cubs because the corporatization of the team is owned by the Tribune Company. It was a different experience, and you kind of talk about the idea that you almost led to a boycott of the Cubs.
Yes, actually, that was in 1991. They raised the price of a bleacher seat from $4 to $6, and what I was saying is that you're pricing the everyday fan out of the ballpark. And when I say there was everyday fans, there was a lot of retirees who used to come out. One of my best friends was Carmella, who lived to be over 100 years old, and she'd take two buses to get to the Wrigley Field and two buses back. And
this was the idea. The bleachers were not reserve seats. They were not something you could buy in advance. I mean, the idea was when the ballpark opened, that's when you could go get bleacher seats. It was very spontaneous. It was open for the people who wanted to come out every day.
Well, you know, Joe Mantegna really hit the nail on the head when he came up with that play, because it's as close as reality as got me involved. And it was a labor of love, and you knew it wasn't always the same people there, so you could have fun doing the same thing over, but that's not the same thing for the visiting fans.
Being a preacher, were you aware of the people who came to drop ashes over the bleacher walls onto the field?
Was that a thing?
Well, my God.
Yeah, I know, right?
I got an exclusive, and I can't remember the exact year. Now I do. It's 1984. The Cubs opened up in San Francisco that year, and I was touting a restaurant on Pier 39. And I asked the PR guy from the Cubs if they can get me some Cub players, and he brought three of them with him, Gary Woods, Larry Boa, and there was this kid that I used to have conversations with myself. And I looked at this guy, and I said, this is a ball player, and it was Sandberg. And while they were eating, they said, you know, we're going to be spreading the ashes of Charlie Grimm before the first game. And I called the newspaper that night and gave him an exclusive. And ashes do happen. I don't know. Do you know the story about my father?
No, what's the story?
Oh, well, this goes back to 1980. I came in during the summer. My father was in his 80s, and his health was slipping, and he did slip into a coma. And he was in a coma for 30 days. And he did not say a thing for 30 days, and I was over in Evanston where he was in the hospital, and I noticed his eyes fluttering, and the next thing I know, he's mumbling. And I went over, and I said, Dad, what are you saying? And this is true. He says, we got to get rid of Kingman. And that was the last thing he ever said.
Come on. That's great.
But I could understand why he said that, because he used to say to me, you know, that King...
He's really like Dave
Kingman. I got to clean it up for my dad. This Kingman be crap, because he come up with men on third base and we need a fly ball and he strike out, or hit a homer and we were already 18 runs ahead.
Terry, it's interesting because, you know, the culture of the bleachers, whether it be the bleacher bums or what you do with the bleacher preachers or all the people you talked about who come out and spontaneously go to a game or pick up tickets there at the time, it's changed. What we're going to see in 2016 here, what we're going to see this weekend, is full price, hundreds of dollars to sit there. It's changed not only just the price of the ticket, but the experience has changed. The bleachers have become a place for flowing beer and more of a beer garden experience. It's a much, much different experience than the bleacher preacher and the bleacher bums.
I'll tell you when it all started. It started with the first night game. The crowd changed. It was a younger yuppie crowd. In fact, I created a T-shirt that said, "Warning: One yuppie is too many for any ballpark." They came with cell phones. This is back in the 80s when hardly everybody had any. Now everybody has a cell phone except me. But they come with Rolex watches. That was a beauty before. You couldn't tell the person next to you. You couldn't tell if he was rich or poor or whatever. And once in a while, someone would come from working downtown, and they bring their attaché case, and they would take their tie off and their shirt off, and they put a T-shirt on, and they felt like one of us. But as the lights came on, the quality of the person, the crowd changed to be, they weren't really baseball-knowledged fans. And one of the things that Bill Vecchi was once quoted saying, by inverse proportion of what a fan pays for a ticket was his knowledge of the game. That's changed because there aren't poor people anymore in the ballpark. And
as we wrap up, for you, you were at the NLCS. You know, the concept of the Cubs coming to Wrigley Field to play a World Series Game 3, Game 4, and Game 5. What's it mean to you, Jerry? What's it mean for all those years of going all the way back to flipping the seats and with your brother to the experiences with your dad in 45 where he says, we'll go next time, to everything that's involved with what you created in the bleachers? What's the emotion that surrounds the weekend that's coming up here?
Primarily, I always equated my youth with Wrigley Field because there was hardly any changes until the Tribune Company made some changes. But also, like Dorian Gray, I started to feel older, whereas I always felt young when I was in the bleachers. And I didn't communicate with the new people as great as I did with the everyday fan or the real baseball fan. It's a different culture. And I realize everything changes, except the Cubs, because they never won. But this year, it's different. I mean, I honestly felt, I used to say, you know, on opening day, the Cubs are going all the way, but I didn't believe it, but I didn't tell anybody. This time, this year,
you believe
there was a, right off the bat, excuse the pun, but right off the bat. And I got to tell you one quickie thing. You know, I had my 10 Fan Manments, and the original 10 Fan Manments, number 3 was honor thy trinity of tinkers, evers, the chance. It was changed just for this year. And it says honor thy trinity of Ricketts, Epstein, and Madden.
And what do you think about Steve Goodman and his song about the last request of a dying Cub fan when he said bid adieu to the bleacher bums and send my ashes over Waveland Avenue?
He was a god. He did see. He was, when he wrote his songs, evidently he had an out of body experience looking down on the bleachers because he captured everything. His lyrics meant something, and to me, he's number one. His songs is timeless.
Jerry Pritikin, the bleacher preacher. Of course, like everybody else, celebrating Cubs culture this week as the Cubs come back to Wrigley Field for the World Series Game 3, 4, and 5. Jerry, thanks for coming in tonight and telling the story.
Next time I see you, we'll be flying a championship flag.